Hello and welcome to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. We're brought to you every week by our sponsors, precisionhydration.com. You can personalize your hydration strategy today with electrolytes in different strengths to match how you sweat. You can get 15% off your first order with the code OXYGENADDICT15. And we're also brought to you by Athletic Greens. Athletic Greens Ultimate Daily is an all-in-one daily supplement with 75 vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, and digestive enzymes. And they're all whole food-sourced ingredients. I can't even say my words here. Listeners can get 20 free travel packs worth over £60 with your first purchase. Head to athleticgreens.com/oxygenaddict. All right, everybody, welcome to the show. It's great to be talking to you all again. And I feel like we're really back into the racing season now. Ironman New Zealand has happened this weekend, and that's always the time when traditionally, I mean, I know these days we don't really ever have a down season, but Ironman New Zealand happening is a time when I think to myself, right, this is it, the season is starting again. So some great results happening down there. First up, I'm going to talk about the ladies' race. It was an absolute domination by today's interview of the week. We managed to get Teresa Adam onto an interview for later on today in the show. She is a really interesting character, and she absolutely dominated this race and annihilated the course record in the process as well. So get this, she went 8 hours 40. Her splits were 50 minutes 26 on the swim, so 2 clear minutes ahead of any other woman. She rode 4:36 on the bike. Now, to put that in context, that was over, I think, 13 or 14 minutes faster than the course record previously set by Lucy Gossage, herself no slouch on the bike, as you all know. So she absolutely hammered it. 4:36 on the bike. At this point, she had a lead of somewhere in the region of sort of 10, 12 minutes over Meredith Kessler. And she then proceeded to run about the same pace as Meredith Kessler as well to close it with a 3:05 marathon to end up with an 8:40 overall. So again, by way of comparison, Meredith Kessler in second swam 52:27. She biked 4:52. She was considerably faster than the rest of the women in the field as well. So, yeah, a really impressive performance by Teresa Adam. And then Meredith ran 3:04:53 to close out in 8:56. And then Judith Vaquera from Spain in 9:03 in third place. But look at this, just as a mark of what a class performance it was by Teresa Adam. Obviously, we've already said it's a course record, which sets it apart anyway. But fifth place pro, Julia Grant, was nearly an hour behind, 55 minutes behind. So that's just an amazing performance by Teresa Adam. So like I said, we've got her lined up on today's show for the interview of the week. As you'll find out, she's had a pretty amazing last couple of years since entering the pro triathlon ranks. So listen out for that later on. Over on the men's side, it was good news for our old mate, Joe Skipper, friend of the show, Joe Skipper. He again has produced a pretty astounding performance. A couple of years ago, Terenzo was the first person to go sub 8 hours on the New Zealand course. I think he went 7:58 or 7:59. Which at the time was a staggering performance. It took over 10 minutes off Cam Brown's course record, which at the time I think stood at 8:07 from memory. Joe has gone 7:54 in this race. He led that out with a 51:59 swim, which put him about 4 minutes down on a lead pack of very, very good athletes. He had Mike Phillips, he had Braden Curry, he had Mark Bosted and Ben Phillips all out in front of him there in a pack of four. He then, get this, he went 4:13 on the bike on the New Zealand course. Now, I know in this day and age of bike splits being down very low into 4 hours, and very occasionally we've had someone go under 4 hours as well, 4:13 may not sound that fast. Just to outline how quick it is, him and Philip Courtney, who finished in fourth, were about 10 minutes faster than the next fastest pros on the day there. So New Zealand has always been renowned for not being a fast course, both in terms of but I think mainly down to the road surface not being particularly quick. But I spoke to Joe after the race, and he was saying he just now has a complete self-belief that he can go to any course in the world and ride really, really fast. He just thinks that's what's required. He was planning to ride between 4:10 and 4:15. So 4:13, while he acknowledges it was fast, he said, it's just what I was going to go out there and do. So a real mark of the guy's sort of self-confidence and the fact he's going to go out there and really deliver on this stuff. Again, 7:54, I really believe, you know, we've got used to Joe Skipper putting out fast times. That is going to send shockwaves out through the international Ironman community, because that's a ridiculously fast time on what's not a very fast course. He closed it out with a 2:43 flat marathon as well. So despite having ridden much, much faster than everyone else apart from Philip Courtney, he closes it out with a 2:43. Mike Phillips got himself second place with 8:01:28, last year's winner. And again, very, very fast time indeed. That would have been, you know, well up there, very close to Terenzo's previous course record. He swam 47:30, biked 4:23, and closed it out with a 2:45. And then Braden Curry in third, 4:27 on the bike, so he faded a little on the back end. But again, he ran 2:44, so the top three there all running significantly 2:45 or under. So it just goes to show, to even make the podium in any kind of Ironman race these days, that 2:45 run is absolutely necessary. So great racing from the three of them. Philip Courtney, as you'll hear when you listen to my interview with Joe Skipper coming up in an episode to be announced later on, him and Joe rode together. They rode legally. They rode, took it in turns. And Joe said, hats off to the guy, super strong cyclist. He ran a 2:56 marathon to finish out there in fourth place. So again, one to watch in the future. He's a previous top 10 finisher at Kona. You know, honorable mention, shout out to Cam Brown, turning 48 years old in a few weeks' time. Still goes 8:14, still runs a 2:51 marathon. The guy's just an absolute legend. So good on you, Cam. That's a brilliant performance there in sixth place. So there's our results from Ironman New Zealand. Some really good coverage, I thought. I thought the Facebook Live coverage was great. I thought they did a good job of like moving up and down the field, and it wasn't just a one-trick pony following the lead group all the time. So yeah, I thought it was good. And as usual, great to see the really beautiful natural world of New Zealand. I think getting out to chance to race in something that is one of the world's most staggeringly beautiful natural environments has got to do something to help people's performances out. So great stuff there. All right. Next bit of news that I've seen is that Super League NEOM, you'll remember a couple of weeks ago, we announced that they were going to have this big exhibition event in the new town of NEOM it's not even built yet, it's proposed at the moment. But unfortunately, Super League NEOM has been postponed to a date to be confirmed in the future due to fears over travel and fears over the current coronavirus crisis. So that's no longer going to be happening in a few weeks' time. Yeah, so watch this space for more news regarding that one. And shout out to sponsors Precision Hydration. Remember, you can get yourself 15% off your first order with the code OXYGENADDICT15. Precision Hydration have got a great online sweat test you can take where you can answer some questions, and it'll give you a really good lead as to whether you're a particularly heavy sweater in terms of volume or a particularly salty sweater in terms of the concentration of sodium. Typically, if you're a person who really struggles in the heat or someone who cramps up a lot when you training indoors, it's a really great idea to take that sweat test. And then they've got personalized hydration and electrolyte sachets that you can take that will really help balance your electrolytes. Personally, I have to take the pH 1500 sachets when I train, otherwise I get ridiculous calf cramps. And every time I sort my bottles out beforehand to get the pH in there, then it doesn't happen at all. So for me, it is a pretty much black or white. Take pH and don't get cramp. Don't take it and get cramp. So I highly recommend these guys. I think it's the best electrolyte supplement out there. And the fact you can get it in different strengths to match how you sweat, I think, is a real bonus as well. All right, Coach's Couch this week. We had a whole bunch of athletes racing at the Cambridge Half Marathon this week. And then I know a load of listeners were racing down there as well from all the tags we've had over on social media. So I wanted to give a shout out to a couple of our athletes. James Clark said to us, I did the Cambridge Half Marathon today and I met a couple of Team OA chums, which was great. I finished in 1:42, which is another 2-minute PB. I did the 9:01 run walk for the first half and then I really let it go on the second. How good does it feel to be passing people in the second half? Just to echo what other people have said, this system really works. I joined Team OA 18 months ago, and since then, I've taken 18 minutes off my half marathon time. And we've got another comment from Benjamin Coghill, who said, "I'm 5 weeks in with Team Oxygen Addict and the Cambridge Half Marathon done with a new PB of 1:42, 6 minutes faster than last time and a minute off my PB." So the system these guys are talking about here is a couple of things. Firstly, we have all of our athletes do their hard work on the bike. So all the hard training gets done on the bike. That cardiovascular work transfers over into running. And we have you just run steady or easy for the vast majority of the time, especially over the winter. The surprising thing is, as we get into, and you'll hear me talk about this over the coming weeks, it doesn't stand to conventional reason that people should then be able to go out and run PBs at 10K and half marathon after just having done steady running all winter. But we've got this evidence of, well, anecdotes, it's not evidence, is it? Anecdotes of people who've trained this way and then they've gone much, much faster than they've expected and often done PBs in running races, despite not having trained the way that conventional wisdom says we should do lots of hard interval running. So I think a big part of this is if you don't do fast running, you don't get injured and you don't get niggles. And if you do fast run training or you do interval training, especially as you get into middle age and you get older, even if you don't get injured, it's really common to be extremely sore for 1 or 2 or 3 days after a run session. Who knows, that might be enough to mean that you don't do a run or that you skip a run. I just think you get a much more consistent run training block in when you're running steady and you're running frequently than skipping runs because you get really sore. The second thing we've talked about there, James Clark mentioned the 9-1 run-walk method. If you do your long runs with a 9-minute run and then a 1-minute walk, it seems to somehow extend the duration you can do the long run by without getting sore. So again, under a traditional run, you go out and do, say, a 90-minute long run, pretty common to be quite sore for 1 or 2 or 3 days afterwards. With that 1-minute walk break every 10 minutes, it just seems to take away almost all or completely all of the soreness, which means that you get back to training quicker and it means that you're more consistent in your training. So overall, you get more done. Overall, you get fitter. I think that's how it works. That's my theory. All I know for sure is it definitely works for our athletes. So if you're interested in giving it a go, there's a link in the show notes. Come and check out Team Oxygen Addicts Coaching. And also remember, for a bit of bike training, if you're interested in coming and doing some interval work with us, we have our weekly Zwift Ride, the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast Power Hour. Tuesdays, 7:15 UK time over on Zwift. You can either check out on the Zwift app and just go through the events and, you know, you don't have to have an invite. You can just join the event just beforehand. Or we've put out links over Twitter and Facebook and things like that. You can click on that and sign up to it beforehand. And yeah, just turn up a few minutes beforehand, get your Zwift all set up. We'll go through a warm-up, we'll go through a structured interval session, and then we'll do a cool down. And we've got sort of encouraging comments on the screen, we'll say, as you guys ride. And you get somehow more out of yourself by having those riders around you on the screen. We've been having 70, 80, 90, 100 riders on these rides over the last few weeks. So a nice big pack there. And it really does motivate you to get the intervals done when you've got something going on in front of you rather than just staring at the ticking second hand on a clock. So come and join us Tuesdays, 7:15 PM UK time, every Tuesday on Zwift. Okay, now just before we do this week's interview of the week with Theresa Adam, I'm going to give a shout out to our second new sponsor, Athletic Greens. Now, this stuff's really cool. I was taking it from January onwards as I was, you know, I've talked frequently, listeners to the podcast will know I had a very flat patch in terms of health and wellness back in sort of November, December, January. I tried Athletic Greens through all of January. And I really felt better at the end of January. I think Athletic Greens was part of it. They've got just one daily scoop that you mix in with a shake of water. It tastes pretty good, actually. It's got like a unique fruity flavor. And it's made out of all manner of different vegetables and minerals. And all knows who else natural ingredients get mixed in there. And it delivers adaptogens, antioxidants, prebiotics, probiotics, digestive enzymes, all of that good stuff that really helps your gut out. I really felt better at the end of January than I did at the start of January. And it's not just down to this thing. I'm not gonna lie and say it's some magic elixir, but I really believed it helped. I didn't get sick at all during January, despite traveling a lot and the usual colds and stuff of the season. And I did feel like my food was somehow getting absorbed better. So if you're interested in giving it a try, I think you'd be hard pressed to find a more comprehensive formula than you get in Athletic Greens. Go to athleticgreens.com/oxygenaddict. And you get 20 free travel packs worth £60 with your first purchase. That's over at athleticgreens.com/oxygenaddict. All right, here we go. This is this week's interview of the week with Ironman New Zealand winner and course record holder. Now she's broken it, Teresa Adam. Teresa Adam, welcome back onto the Oxygenaddict Triathlon Podcast and congratulations on your race this weekend, the win, Ironman New Zealand. And course record as well. So how are you feeling today, first up?
Yeah, thanks for having me. How am I feeling after that? Actually, it's quite strange. I'm feeling not too bad. I'd say this
really?
Probably one of the best recoveries I've had from an Ironman. I mean, this is my seventh now. And I'm not feeling too bad, not too sore. So I take that as another win.
Well, I've got to say it's a remarkable performance that you put out there. It's been rightly lauded in the press as one of the standout performances of recent times. Were you expecting to go so quickly?
I have a really good team around me. All the press and everything is awesome. I mean, a couple of months ago, I went to Western Australia and I won there from start to finish and I rode 4:32 there. So it's just, I guess, with the Ironman now, the live coverage, it's just made this result a lot more globally noticed, I guess, which is great. So, yeah, it's something that I think for me we've been working towards and, we quietly knew what was coming.
Well, listen, I'm going to read you a quote that I read in Triathlete magazine this morning as I was doing a bit of research. It says, I think you're going to quite enjoy this. It said, she's got the swim speed of Lucy Charles and now it appears the bike power of Daniela Reef. How do you feel about that?
Oh, yeah, that's high praise. Two extremely,
They're the best in the sport, aren't they, at the moment? Yeah. And, before we talk about in detail the race at New Zealand, let's go back a little bit and talk about your journey into triathlon, because from the reading that I've been doing, it wasn't the smoothest transition in, and you had a bit of a break, and also it's quite an unusual background you've got, wasn't it, coming into triathlon? So talk to us a little bit about your sporting background as a youngster.
Yeah, so I guess, as you said, it has been a up and down sort of roller coaster path I've taken. In terms of when I first started to get quite serious about sport, I was actually only about 14 or 15. I was playing water polo. And that was a sport that I was fully into when I was 14. And it all started, I missed making the New Zealand under 15 team. And I remember when I was, 14 thinking that's it, I got to make that team next year. Because I still had another year. And, I ended up playing under 15s and then continued on. I played under 17s, schoolgirls, junior women, senior women. This was all before I was 18. So,
wow.
I guess swimming's the kind of sport like that you can't, like I was never a classic swimmer. I didn't grow up at a squad. My dad threw me in the pool and said swim. and it was just something that I naturally found, I took to, and with water polo, it was, we were swimming, we'd do sessions twice a day on camps and sometimes three times in the pool. So a lot of swimming, not, specifically squad swimming, just a lot of swimming. And I think that set me up with quite a big engine. So when I was leaving high school and I was looking for something a bit different, and I was doing a bit of training, like run training, and I dabbled in a triathlon and really enjoyed it. And you had the fitness there and things, but obviously the running was a bit lacking. Also the cycling, I'd never ridden a bike before properly. And so, but within a year, pretty much I'd sort of taken to it and been picked up by High Performance Sport New Zealand and Triathlon New Zealand. And I was racing in a very short period. I was racing for New Zealand in ITU races. And then, stepped up, I think it was like my second year, to under 23. And that's when issues started. We went, I got taken overseas to do training camps in Boulder, Colorado, and in Germany, and just thrown in with the squad, all the, you know, top athletes in New Zealand, Chris Gemmell, Andrea Hewitt, and obviously wanted to keep up, and the body just wasn't ready. And I ended up with quite a few injuries, and over the next few years, it just was injury after injury. And I had to stop after, I had compartment syndrome. I had a surgery for compartment syndrome and tried to come back, and then ended up with a disc bulge in my back. And yeah, so that I just ended up, quite broken, and then I had to stop basically, and not do any sport for quite a few years until my body had settled down. There was a lot of nerve pain and things just from overdoing it so much. Yeah. And then into long course, I think it was maybe 4 or 5 years after, I met my partner, and he was helping me just with, getting fit again and just getting back into sport. And he was a cyclist and realized pretty quickly, you know, that I was suited to longer stuff, and he helped me move into the long distance triathlon. And I guess, yeah, here we are.
So it must have been, really tough for you, the time between, you know, going from New Zealand national squad and then picking up lots of injuries. How did you deal with that time in between when you basically couldn't train?
It was tough.
I bet.
I met some good people, and they worked with me, outside of the program, outside of, triathlon. It was actually quite funny. It was, you guys play a lot of rugby probably as well in England. The All Blacks sports, massage therapist, and the All Blacks, sports psychologist who I ended up working with, to help me basically just get back to being a normal human again, if that makes sense. I'd sort of just pushed, like, you know, and I'd been doing sport since I was a kid, so it's all I knew. So it was something, it was quite a big change. And yeah, they were awesome in helping me through that patch. And then I just, yeah, had sort of unwound it all down just to being, you know, healthy and happy, and had a job, and then I met my partner, and when I was well again.
So it really sounds as though, like, there was a huge amount of pressure on you, and you've been really, really driven. You said from the age of sort of 13, 14, you've been hugely driven to make the national team, to be the best. Was there a massive period for you of sort of readjusting to the idea that maybe, you know, I'm imagining that sport might have been part of your identity at that point. Were you having to adjust to the idea that maybe you weren't going to get to do sport going forwards?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was so bad that I didn't know if I would be able to run or ride or do anything again. Obviously, I was using the water a lot. It helped with rehab, with recovery. I was getting in the pool, but at the start, I wasn't even swimming. I was just water walking, not aqua jogging, just water walking, you know, to help that sort of recovery process. And just, yeah. And yeah, definitely, like you said, it was, there were times where, it was just, I wasn't even thinking about doing sport again. So it was just about feeling normal again.
Wow. Well, it must make these sort of these performances all the sweeter for the fact you'd kind of let go of the idea of being an athlete, and then you've come back to be racing at the very highest level. Do you ever get to sit back and reflect on, like, how far out you had to go to come back?
Now that you've asked me, this is like, yeah, no, 100%. Like, it's, I learn, you know, you learn a lot through that sort of period, and it does change you. And obviously, in the back of my mind, like, you know, saying I was thinking I'd never come back, I'm still that driven person, and I was doing everything I could to potentially get better and come back. So I never really gave up. But yeah, I just had to be patient and wait, and started to get that sort of attitude of what will be. And I think I've brought that through into this long course racing, where, like, I turn up on the start line, and like you said, it's just kind of a bonus, and I'm kind of like, yep, I'm going to go as hard as I can, do my best, and what will be. So it's quite fun. Yeah.
It sounds like you've got a different attitude to it now. And I suppose 4 or 5 years away from doing any kind of competitive sport, really gives you a taste for it when you actually get to come back and a bit of a different perspective.
Yeah, definitely. And I think just I suit the longer distance better. It's just mentally, physically, I don't know. It's just something that suits me better. So when I was doing ITU, you know, it was probably I was fighting a lot against naturally what I was good at, which is the longer stuff. You know, the shorter, higher intensity stuff probably is, you know, something that I'd always have to work super, super hard at. Probably comes more naturally to other people. So yeah, I found with the long course stuff, I just really enjoy it. Yeah.
So was it the high intensity running in particular that caused you problems?
Just overtraining the legs, just too much running too fast, too soon, all of the above.
Well, you came back into triathlon, from what I can see on your website, you came back in sort of 2016, 2017. Talk us through the process where what happened as you came back into the sport, and you said you met your partner, he was a cyclist, you started doing some riding with him, and pretty quickly he realized you were quite handy at this cycling business.
Yeah, I mean, when I was racing ITU, I was already pretty good on the bike. Like when the high performance squad would take us to a few bike races in New Zealand, and I won a couple of races and won a tour down here when I was racing ITU. And when I started riding, being a strength, I sort of developed quite well on the bike. And then I guess now it's just I have a better understanding of training, of what I'm doing, and what I do is a lot more specific, and there's no fluff. And I guess we've really managed to figure out what works for me and built on that. And so I just sort of seem to keep getting stronger on the bike at the moment.
Well, 2018, you really sort of burst onto the pro scene and everyone's consciousness with finishing second at Ironman New Zealand to Laura Siddle. Was that your first full distance race?
Yeah. Yep. 2018. Yeah. So I'd only really done a handful of 70.3s before then. I hadn't raced professionally for, you know, up until 2018 Ironman New Zealand. So that was kind of my first step back into the, you know, professional kind of side of it. And we just decided to see, you know, how it would go.
So that was your first pro race as well. Your first pro race was at an Ironman.
Yeah. Off the top of my head, like, wow. I've done races here in New Zealand. Yeah. 70.3s. But yeah, that was my first one.
And how did that go for you then? Everyone's experience of the first Ironman is obviously very different, but what were your thoughts going through your head at the lining up on the start line of your first Ironman?
Oh, I was obviously terrified.
It's so good to hear you say that as well.
Yeah, it wasn't something that I'd ever thought I would be doing. Like, you know, being ITU and that, you're just like, I don't even think about doing long course. That's just ridiculous. Yeah. And then, obviously I did some 70.3s and they were always quite comfortable. And I was like, this is weird. And I would just sort of, my mindset would just be treated as like a training day. You can, you know, you've done this in training, just do the same pacing and you'll be fine. And so that was what I set out to do that first Ironman that I did, was just treat it as a long training day. If you break it up like that, obviously I had never run a full marathon or ridden 180 Ks before. But in my mind, I was just trying to go through at a pace that we knew was steady all day pace. And so, yeah, to finish, I think I did 9:05 and second there was a huge, huge boost, and just made us go, okay, wait, this is quite good. And I, obviously it hurt a lot, but as I said, I was reasonably comfortable all day, I think. And that's when, you know, you kind of think, oh, okay, I've got the engine for this kind of long stuff.
And then races after that, you went to Cairns that year and you broke the course record at Ironman Cairns and won a few months later. And then you went to Hawaii and you finished top 20 in Hawaii in your first trip out there. What point did you realize, you know what, I might be pretty good at this?
Oh, yeah. After that first one I did in New Zealand, it was like, did I just seriously, you know, podium? It was, when I was racing, I always wanted to podium or win international races, but I just, you know, I was essentially just middle packing. And I had some good races, top tens and top fives and things, but there was never, you know, I wasn't ever excited that I would win. But whereas when I raced an Ironman, I was like, wow, you know, this is something that I'm reasonably good at. And so, yeah, going to Cairns 3 months later was just the, in our minds, the next logical step, because it's close to home. It's another level up to see, you know, to test myself. And we'd had that training block for Ironman New Zealand, and, you know, we knew what worked there. So we sort of just copied and pasted and went to Cairns, and it obviously went extremely well there as well. So it was a lot of learning through that period. And then obviously when you qualify for Kona, everyone was just, it was just quite an exciting time, and I kind of overdid it. I got too excited and rushed back into training and ended up with a bit of tendonitis. And so leading into Kona that first year, I had missed quite a bit of training through the tendonitis. And we sort of thought, well, don't I need to do a heat camp? And we went away overseas to – we went to Tucson for quite a few weeks and then went to Hawaii 2 weeks out. So it was just a lot of learning that year. And I learned that, you know, I don't go super well overseas for long periods of time away from my comfort zone. And, you know, so, and then leading into Kona, just, you know, I felt maybe I was there for too long before the race. It was just too hot. I couldn't train properly. So all of that, and then doing the race itself, it was just hard. It was, yeah, walked the run, and I just thought, yeah, never going to go well here. But so we learned a lot that trip. And then we decided we'd, you know, stay at home last year. I didn't take my spot. I didn't go and just do a good train, you know, a long training block to build more engine. Because we just decided if you're always tapering and preparing for a race, you know, you're missing opportunities to build, you know, a long block of engine. So that was our thought process around that. Yeah,
and it definitely seemed to work as well, didn't it? Because 2019, you broke the course record when you won Ironman Cairns again, and then you broke the course record at Ironman Western Australia when you went, was it 8:38? You went to Ironman Western Australia in 2019.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
All
yeah, right. So that was a good day too.
I bet it was. Yeah. Then how fast? How fast do you think you can go over the Ironman distance course? Do you sit down and think of it in terms of that, or is it all about just securing the win? Because looking at the way that you raced at New Zealand, it looked like you almost wanted to see how much you could get out of yourself. You were a long way ahead of everybody else, weren't you?
Yeah, I think off the bike to Meredith, I had, it was over 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure, between 15 to 20 minutes. And then I had a quick stop in the toilet, which I don't normally do, but I really needed to. and then she was charging off the bike and I running and took out, I think, 3 minutes out of me in the first half of the first lap. And I heard the split and I was like, oh, okay. But I knew what I could run, and I sort of go out at the pace that I hope to hold the whole way. So it's a long run. And I guess in terms of trying to go quicker and faster, I don't think about it. I just want, you know, I want to get better in each discipline. And I feel if you do that, you end up, you know, faster on the day. And I do feel like there's a lot more work or things and places I can get faster, I guess, is my answer.
Well, one thing that was really interesting to me, obviously, Meredith Kessler is known as being a very strong biker. You yourself took 13 minutes off the bike course record in that race, and Meredith rode within a couple of minutes of the old record. And when I had a quick look at the times from Kona, and I know it's never going to be an apples to apples comparison, but there was about a 15 minute gap between Meredith and Lucy Charles in the Kona bike splits, and about the same between you and Meredith at this race here in New Zealand. So that quote that we read you from Triathlete magazine, that you can swim with Lucy and bike with Daniela Reef, I mean, that's not just hyperbole. You're really in those ballparks. How's that sit with you going forward for the rest of the year?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I know that to swim with Lucy, I'd probably need to shave a couple of minutes. I wouldn't say I'd be swimming with her at the moment. If I swam more, maybe, I'm not sure. Swimming's definitely the one I don't do a lot of in training. So that's somewhere where I feel I can improve. I haven't really looked, so I haven't been comparing myself to others. Like I said, I sort of just turn up and do the best I can and try and go as fast as I can. And I mean, the way I see Kona is it's a different race, so anything can happen there. You know, it's just that race. It's a bit crazy.
Yeah, it's unique in that there are environmental and weather challenges as well as having the competition and pressure from all the best athletes in the world.
Mm, yeah, definitely. Yeah, the first year I went, it was an eye-opener. So, yeah, I'll look at that, you know, sort of later down the track this year and see what we're going to do this year.
Well, what are your plans for the rest of the year then? Have you got your race schedule lined up already?
Yeah, so I'm on PWAG racing team. And so PWAG is a chain manufacturing company based in Austria, very old company, lots of history. And they began supporting another Kiwi last year, Mark Bosted, and he introduced me. And so I'm on the team with them, and I'll go and race Ironman Austria in July. So we're heading over to Europe, maybe a little bit earlier. I'm currently on the internationals team for the PTO Collins Cup. So that's another race I'll be looking at doing.
Well, that was going to be the next thing I was going to ask you, was obviously with this performance, you've catapulted yourself straight up the rankings there. How are you viewing the Collins Cup? How are you viewing this this sort of massive injection of money and, well, not just money, but also the aim behind it is obviously to grow the sport and to grow the pros and to raise your profile as a group of athletes. What are your thoughts on that at the moment?
Obviously I love it. I think it's great. And I think it's, you know, I'm really excited about it. So the idea of the Collins Cup, I think, is great as well. Bringing together, you know, the internationals, Europeans and, USA, I've, you know, grown up watching golf, so I know about the Ryder Cup, and then I see that as quite a cool idea. So I'm excited, and obviously I hope I stay in that team so I get a chance to experience it.
And obviously with it being head-to-head racing, have you had a little look at the entry list and thought, that's what I want my match to be? I want to take down these two. Who are the people you'd really like to race head-to-head?
I haven't thought about that yet, now that you've mentioned it.
Oh, really? Okay.
I'll go and have a look. Yeah, well, because everything was sort of focusing on Ironman New Zealand, and a couple of weeks before Ironman New Zealand, obviously I raced the New Zealand National Cycling Champs. So I've been a little bit busy and haven't jumped on and had a look yet. But I've got some downtime, so I'm going to obviously it being my next, target race, I'll do some research.
All right, I'm going to put you on the spot. Here you go. Here's your choices, right, from the European team. You can choose Daniela, Lucy, Anne Haug, or Holly Lawrence. Which one of those four would be a pick for a match head-to-head?
Honestly, I'd just have to pick it out of a hat.
You're not being drawn on it. I love it.
Yeah, I can't pick. I just want to do a blind pick, and it is what it is. They're all class athletes, fast, every single one of them.
Nice. You mentioned a minute ago those wins in the New Zealand National, well, that win in the New Zealand National Time Trial Championships. You were also third in the Road Race Championships as well, weren't you?
Yeah. That was fun that weekend.
Did you grow up doing any bike racing at all, or has your bike racing background just entirely been through what you've done through triathlon?
Yeah. As I mentioned before, I hadn't actually ridden a bike, a race bike, or anything until I was about 18. I didn't grow up racing at all. But I just loved it straight away. I've really always enjoyed cycling, and so obviously we did in ITU. It's draft legal, so. That's, you know, you get used to riding in packs there, and with the Tri NZ high performance squad, they took us, you know, to bike races and tours and things to develop our skills on the bike for triathlon, for ITU racing. And so, yeah, targeting elite nationals this year was more about the time trial. That was my target key race, that, you know, the one we wanted to win. And obviously, you know, anytime I line up, I want to win. So the road race was, you know, a bit less of a goal, but obviously I wanted to try and go really, really well there. And the cycling scene in New Zealand, especially women's, is getting stronger and stronger, which is really cool to see. We've got quite a number of girls on the world tour now. And so, yeah, to be racing with those girls, and it was hard. Like, I don't, you know, we don't do a lot of bunch riding at all. I spend, being an Ironman athlete, spend most of my time riding solo. So all the bunch riding, the surging, the sprinting, you know, they attack hills, they go hard, and all that stuff was quite a bit of a shock to the body. But I just loved it. It was really fun.
Well, it's pretty amazing that you can finish third in the road race championships. Well, it's amazing you can win the time trial championships as well. Does this open up the possibility, obviously with it being an Olympic cycle, does it open up the possibility of you going to the Olympics on the bike, do you think? Is that something you've considered?
Yeah, sadly, New Zealand didn't qualify any spots, so it's not, yeah, on the cards.
Oh, what a shame.
Yeah. But that, I mean, obviously Ironman's my main goal. So it would have to have lined up to fit in with my schedule there. But yeah, I just love doing it. And if it lines up well in terms of, you know, it doesn't interfere with a race or it helps my build up to a race, then I'll jump in and do some bike racing, because I do believe it does help fitness quite a lot. Yeah.
Well, it looks like it's helping you at the moment, doesn't it? You need to keep on doing what you're doing, because it's clearly working.
Yeah, no, I'm just having fun, you know, and that's the main thing. I know it sounds pretty boring, but my main goals are just to continue enjoying, you know, training, every, you know, recovery, all the little bits that go with it, and hanging out with my partner, Dan. And, you know, I've got a good coach as well. Dan introduced me to my coach, and, you know, obviously PWAG racing team, and I'm just enjoying the lifestyle, and all the results that come with that are just bonuses for me.
Well, do you know, that is something that really comes across. It sounds like you're just really grateful almost to have a second bite at this, and the results seem to be secondary to you. It seems like you're just getting a tremendous amount of satisfaction from being healthy enough to train, and the racing's a bonus.
Yeah, like, I don't take it for granted, obviously, and I work very hard to achieve the results, but I don't know. I just think that it's a great place to be and a great mindset to have.
Fantastic. All right. Well, listen, thank you so much for your time, and congratulations on the results. It's been great watching you steam up through the ranks over the last couple of years. We'll definitely be keeping our eye on you for the Collins Cup this summer. That'd be great to see you racing there ahead of going out to Ironman Austria. And I'm going to leave you with this. Austria is renowned for being a really fast course. Have you had any thoughts about how fast you might be able to go there if all things work out perfectly?
Yeah, I haven't thought about that, but we did go last year to sign with PWAG, and we watched the race, and we checked out the course a little bit. So yeah, quietly excited to see what I can do there. And as I said, I was focused on building up to these two races. So now I've got some downtime. I'll have a look and do some planning around that race.
Nice. Well, I've got the scent of another course record in my nostrils here. So go out and see if that's a byproduct of having fun and training and enjoying racing, Teresa.
Yeah, cool. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. It's been great having you on the show, and hopefully we can speak to you again in the future. And best of luck for the rest of 2020.
Oh, cheers. Thank you.
All right, great stuff there from Teresa. It sounds like she's really got a second bite of the cherry, doesn't it, with coming back from injury after such a long layoff. And you can really hear in her voice that she just really appreciates the fact that she gets to train all the time again, having been so injured. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how she goes at Ironman Austria. I know that's a big race for her PWAG team. So yeah, get out there. And I've got a feeling that she could go super fast on the Austria course. So watch this space. Wait till Ironman Austria comes around. Okay, then. So that wraps up this week's episode. Thanks very much to our sponsors, Precision Hydration. You can get yourself 15% off your first order with the code OxygenAddict15. Go to athleticsgreens.com/OxygenAddict to get 20 free travel packs worth over £60 with your first purchase. If you're looking to get a home blood test done, you can get yourself 50% off your first test with the code OxygenAddict50 over at thriver.co. And if you're looking to try out our triathlon coaching, head over to teamoxygenaddict.com. There's a link in the show notes for all of these so you don't have to remember them. So remember, everybody, until next week, have a great, safe training and racing week. We'll be back with an interview with Joe Skipper. I'm a New Zealand winner on the male side. I'm Coach Rob Wilby, and you've been listening to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. See ya.